afternoon. My name is Jürgen Steinmetz, joining you from livestream.travel and eTurbo News in beautiful Honolulu, Hawaii. Beautiful sunny day here, and we always talk about the weather, so I don't want to forget to ask Dr. Peter Tallo, my co-host in College Station. Fort Worth, I almost said, in College Station, Texas. How's the weather in College Station? Last week, I didn't want to ask you, but now I think I can ask you.
Yeah, no, it's safe. It was a little rainy today and misty, but temperatures were around 17 degrees Celsius, about 60 degrees Fahrenheit. And the skies could be a little bit bluer, but there's supposed to be a beautiful weekend coming. So we're definitely past the cold and the ice and the rain. Or the rain is okay, but we're past the snow and the ice, and everything is now melted, and slowly but surely, those plants that survived are going to start blooming again. We've kind of lost a number of plants, but hopefully the other ones will come back. So, having said that, once again, there's lots of stuff in the world of tourism. I see that the U.S. Congress is debating a bill to possibly give extra money to the airlines or to some of the key tourism industries. And of course, that's really needed terribly in the tourism world. I think of all industries, it's probably suffered more than any other industry. And I understand the UNWTO is creating a new form that will say which countries should be kept on a no-go list and which countries have now brought their sanitation up to a level that is acceptable for people to visit. I don't know if you have heard anything about that or not.
No, but I'd be very scared to put the UNWTO in charge.
Yes,
of,
yes.
Judging from the current leadership.
Yes.
A number
of South American police officers, South American police departments have mentioned this to me. And I mentioned that the same thing, that I would be scared. I wondered what might be going on under the table. And secondly, I'm not sure how you would determine if a country is clean enough or not clean enough to visit, because all countries have parts that are clean and parts that aren't clean. There's no one country that's totally clean or totally dirty. So I wonder how they're planning on, I'd be interesting if we could find some information what they're proposing or not proposing.
Yeah, and this is really, if you go back to our own organization, you and I are involved in the World Tourism Network. It's one of the reasons we stopped the Safer Tourism SEER program for right now, because you really cannot determine. There is no formula, and there's no internationally established guidelines that can vouch for a destination, an attraction, or a hotel, or an airline to be absolutely safe and not safe. And if you put this on the country, specifically in an organization like the UNWTO, I wouldn't be surprised if all the executive council countries that vote actually for the Secretary General would be considered safe, and the rest of them, you know, maybe not. So there's a lot of room, in my opinion, for fraud, and yes, we shouldn't trust an organization, not even the UNWTO or the World Health Organization, in becoming a judge and a jury at the same time for this.
Of course, it will have perception value. Now, there's a country that should receive such a seal from the UNWTO will brag about it. But as I have not been able to find any guidelines, even in others, what they use or claim to use as their judgment. I think that I wonder what other things might be going on under the table, but it's not for me to accuse anybody because I don't have any data. But I certainly would, like you, question any program such as this. So I think it's something we should be thinking about a lot.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yes.
Interesting line of thoughts, but it kind of confirms again that the world is kind of clueless when it comes how to deal with this virus, and the travel and tourism industry is desperate, rightfully.
Yes.
And so many players that used to be leaders in the old days are not really turning out to be leaders in the new days, and now real leadership is needed. And unfortunately, yes. It's hard to find. I wouldn't say it's not there, but it's hard to find.
And it's in all sorts of pockets around the world. Today, I had a series of meetings with Santa Catarina in southern Brazil. And if you know Brazil, the southern states are really some of Brazil's most beautiful and best developed states. And they were telling me that Santa Catarina, the state of Santa Catarina in Brazil, is just being decimated by the COVID virus. And the impact on the economy is beyond terrible. And of course, we're in February. February in the Southern Hemisphere is like August in Europe. It's the number one travel month. So if people are not coming, many of the beach resorts along the Brazilian coast from the southern part of that coast are dependent on Uruguayans and Argentinians and Chileans. And if they're not showing up, that's a really major economic level. It would be like no one showing up in Spain in August or in Portugal in August. It would be a really devastating blow. They're having a lot of trouble.
Absolutely. And we really, I mean, now you get these stories that cruise lines are booking up for the end of the year and beginning of next year. It's hope. And it's hope. It's good to have hope.
Yes.
But you cannot really say the world of tourism is coming back to order because the cruise lines.
No, far from it. As a matter of fact, Dr. Fauci has been saying nothing may happen till the end of 2022. And I don't know if that's true or not. I certainly hope not, because there are countries getting herd immunity, including now it appears with the new vaccines and with people who have antibodies from having had COVID, that we may be up to 40% of the American public has antibodies against COVID. And that's either through vaccination or illness recovery. So we may be closer in that sense than we think. And I think there's going to be a real issue between the tourism industry and some of our politicians. The New York Times today had a really condemning set of articles about the politicization of schools and the fact that children aren't going back to school, not for science, but for politics. And that's that impacts tourism, because if children are at home, it's impossible for parents to work and be at home at the same time, and vacations totally fall apart. So that's a big issue. And it's also an issue of summer employment, because the tourism industry offers a lot of employment for part-time jobs. And that's where people get their first work experience. And if those aren't going to take place, then it's not only the lack of money, but it's the lack of learning that's so important. So that's something that really has to be thought through, because tourism is more than a business. It's also an educational tool where people learn to give good customer service, to show up on time, and it's entry-level positions that prepare you for better positions along the way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's even more than that. It's a tool of people in the world to talk to each other and come together. And luckily we have Zoom. Zoom in some makes it actually even easier, because you don't really have to travel and you can still talk to people all over the world. So I think that's one of the fortunate things we have. But of course, it's very different to look someone in the eyes and touch things and smell things.
And of course, the other thing is, from the airline industry or the meetings industry or the convention industry, Zoom conferences are a disaster. Because if I don't have to travel, I'm not buying an airline ticket.
Right.
It's a lot cheaper for me to stay home and meet with you on Zoom than it is for me to buy an airline ticket, spend time in a hotel, have to eat in a restaurant. But all those things I'm not doing are costing somebody else a lot of money. And that puts people out of jobs, because tourism produces is one of the biggest producers of jobs in the world. And if people aren't spending, then those jobs start unemploying people, start laying people off, or start... And tax money goes down. And remember, a lot of cities are very dependent on tourism tax revenue.
Right.
So it's much more complicated than what people think. What else is going on in the world from the views from the Pacific there?
Well, an interesting story is China is changing the, I would say, the procedure, you can probably call it now, how to do a swab test. And I think there was some kind of a dispute with American diplomats.
It was a joke.
Well, it doesn't seem to be a joke because...
No, the Chinese government said it was a joke. What it was is it was like a prank. And they told the American diplomats they had to have anal testing in order to be sure that they were not having COVID and that they had to drop their pants in order for them to test them anally. And then today the Chinese admitted the whole thing was just a setup to see if the diplomats would be stupid enough to do it. And they didn't think about it. Wait a second, this makes no sense. But the whole thing was just a giant prank. And the Chinese found it to be hysterically funny. And to be quite honest, it was funny because they had a good sense of humor. So I give the Chinese credit for having a good sense of humor.
Well, let's hope it's a sense of humor because there are several articles that appeared in Newsweek and several other large publications in the US. And there's links to studies actually that say the rectal test for COVID is by far more effective. And I'm trying to see this actually, who did this study.
Yeah. Today, the Chinese said it was a joke, but it would be interesting to see. I mean, could you see in an airport asking everybody to have a rectal test before they got on a plane?
I don't think you have to go too far. Maybe you should check with the University of North Texas in Denton.
Yes.
This was one of the sources for this. And let me just look at another source was PubMed. It's a government website. And let me just see who's behind this website here. Regardless, if you go to our article on this today for eatovernews.com, you can actually find a link. There is a government website. It ends with a G-O-V, so it's an official
Why don't you look and see if at some point now there's the Chinese saying the whole thing was a giant put on and that people just fell for it?
Well, I think maybe the giant joke was to force diplomats. But
it could be. But I cannot imagine that people are going to go to get rectal exams for COVID. I think that would probably start a revolution. And no, could you imagine you cannot get on a plane without a rectal exam?
No, well, what can I say?
Not only do you have to go through everything with security after post 9/11, and you have to take your shoes off and take your watch off, but now, and people joke when they're going through security, they say, well, the next thing you're going to have me do is take my pants off. And now we're going to say, yep, that's what we're going to do. Everybody's got to drop their pants before they get on a plane. I think that would be the end of tourism, at least travel.
Peter, but you and I, we still remember the times you can bring relatives and friends right to the aircraft.
Basically. Yes, yes.
Look how things have changed even
before. Yes, not for the better, but they've changed for necessity, but not...
And now people, I mean, would you ever imagine just a little bit more than a year ago that you couldn't go out on the streets when you want, that you couldn't sit in restaurants the way you want?
Yeah.
And the world really has changed in a short time. And coming back to this, because it's an interesting subject, and I think we should investigate this a little bit more, the National Library of Medicine, what is a government-supported website, has the same finding about the test. And this is a study they recently concluded, and it's published here. So I'm not sure how much of a joke this is, but...
it'd be interesting to see. I would like to ask our listeners, how many of them would travel on a bus, train, or airplane if you had to have a rectal exam before you could get on?
Well, maybe that's the purpose. But anyway, this good study is from November of 2020. It's not too old.
Yes.
And who knows? You know, there might be something behind it. I can imagine that maybe the Chinese would say, okay, this was just a joke, but thanks for doing it. You know, we don't know.
Yeah. It would be interesting to see. But I certainly hope this would not become a standard, because I think this would be really a death. I just cannot believe, you know, that's going to happen, or they're going to say that you have to have women have to have a breast exam before they can get on. I think we're going to be really close to sexual harassment and all these things. And it should be very interesting. I think people are putting up with a lot with travel. This might be the, you know,
the tipping point.
Yeah, this might be the point where we break the camel's back. So we'll find out. We'll learn about that. I would think a lot of countries are pretty conservative in how they care for their bodies and might not be very happy with this.
No. I mean, I think no one is happy with Corona altogether, but right. You know how far you can take it. And some people say it's taken already too far. Other things it's not taken far enough.
Yes, as you know, some of the interestingly leftist intellectuals, both in the United Kingdom and the United States, are really saying we're moving closer and closer to a 1929 German fascism, and we're not paying attention to it. And it's each day that's going away. Interestingly enough, some of our top intellectuals have pointed out there's nothing in the Constitution that gives the government the right to suspend something because of a national health crisis. And so the need to balance liberty with the need to balance health is a really important issue that we need to talk about, you know, as a nation. We need to have a national and an international conversation on how do we maintain those two balances. And there's no easy answer.
Yeah, no, and there isn't. And we can only hope that the vaccine is kicking in one way or the other. Now we're down to 60% efficiency rate for the new Johnson & Johnson medicine.
Right, but it's only one shot, and that's really valuable. Because I think a lot of people don't necessarily go and get their second vaccine. So at least they're having one shot is already helping to create herd immunity. So I'm really, I had the Moderna, but I'm really happy that they also have the Johnson & Johnson one out. I think it's going to really help move it along through much of the population. And I would rather have 60% than 0%.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And we take whatever we can take. I guess.
Right. Yes.
It's more alarming to me today when you read reports about the vaccine no more being fully effective in areas like New York or South Africa because of new strains. So this is something I think we should really watch.
But the good news is Moderna today said that they're coming up with a booster shot that will be able to deal with all the new strains. So it means people will have to go back to get a third shot, but they hope to have that developed within the month. So hopefully that's true. And that booster shot would be really excellent. Now, what we don't know and what's still scary is how long these... Now, I'm vaccinated. And today was actually my liberation day. It means that it's 21 days after the second shot when all my antibodies should be just good to go, etc. But having said that, we don't know, am I now 96% immune from the virus for 6 months, 8 months, a year, 2 years, 3 months? No one knows. So that's the next thing we really need to know is what is the length of immunity that you have? Not only the level of immunity, but the length. And that's going to mean a lot because we'll be able to say, okay, every 6 months you have to have a backup shot or every year. That means we need to produce a lot of vaccine.
And Peter, congratulations for getting to this stage. You're one of the few, one of the proud, I guess.
Yes. I think I told you when I got my card. Right. I felt like I was getting a third PhD.
I can imagine. You know, I would probably give up a PhD if I had one for that.
Yeah. But I went in and I had my card laminated. And I said, and I was beaming. The woman said, people usually don't beam when they get a vaccination. And I told her how I felt. And she said, you know, many people have come in to get the card laminated. So you don't, because it's paper card and you don't want to, you know, if you want to keep it in your wallet, whatever. And everybody says the same thing. They feel like they got a degree. It's like a graduation. They got a degree from college. So yeah, it was like a whole new lease on life.
No, it was. I'm just curious. We talked about it before, and we had actually a session on how you felt when you went through these two shots. But maybe you can summarize for those that didn't hear our first session. How do you feel now? Do you have anything what reminds you?
No. So the first shot, I really didn't feel much afterwards at all. My arm was like just a little bit sore for about a few hours. The second shot, my arm was sore from about the elbow to the middle of my back for about 2 days, and then it went away, and that was it. Some people have had no reaction at all. Some people have had much more flu-like symptoms. Sometimes people are nauseous, or they have chills, hot and cold chills for about 12 hours. There doesn't appear to be any logic. So sometimes you think, well, it's the same doses, no matter what size you are. So you might think a smaller person would have a bigger reaction than a bigger person. But it's just, I think, the genes that God gave you. No one seems to know what other than the only real advice is drink a lot of water before you have the vaccine and have a lot of water after. So in other words, have, you know, maybe two full glasses of water or two bottles of water, you know, a drinking size bottles of water before you take it and then after you take it. And that seems to help some people, but there's no, but no matter what it is, even if you have chills or you have some mild flu-like symptoms for a few hours, take the vaccine, because the bottom line is it's worth being under the weather for 10 hours and not getting COVID, and God forbid getting COVID and have repercussions for months later. So the it doesn't matter what your repercussions are taken, but I'm absolutely fine. I have no feelings, you know, it's like any other day. So I'm really glad I had it. And you should wait. I still wear a mask. I social distance because it's stupid not to. But the chances of my getting sick now are, from all the studies, most of the studies come out of Israel, is about 0.004. And if you should get sick, which is only like 1/4 of one person out of 100, so we're really low there, is it'll be a very mild case, but you won't have to go to the hospital. So in all cases, this has done a really, certainly Moderna and Pfizer have done a really good job of protecting the public. As soon as you can get it, get it.
Yeah, no, this is a good advice. And coming from you, it hopefully will help a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to add to it and that you're actually teaching medicine also. Okay. At the university, so you know what you're talking about.
Yeah. In
the security and safety aspect. So hopefully you will not lose your card.
I had it copied. I have two of them. I keep one in my passport and one in my wallet. So if I lose my wallet, I still have the card and the passport. And it's also, by the way, kept on a record from the people that give you the vaccine. So you could hypothetically get another one. But what you do want to do, I think, is laminate it so that it doesn't get, you know, just messed up in your wallet. But that's a technical thing. Keep one at home. Keep one with you. You really feel liberated. It's like losing 10 pounds. You just feel good that you've accomplished something. And it really has. Hopefully the whole country, some states are doing a really good job. Some states are doing a poor job of vaccinating people. We need to really get everybody up and vaccinated.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, I mean, we covered a lot.
Yes, it is. Tonight is Purim. And so if you're eating hamantaschen, which is in Hebrew, is called Oznei Haman. And in English, it's called hamantaschen, which means Haman's pockets. Taschen might be a German word also. I don't know. How do you say Haman's pockets in German?
I don't even know what
Haman's pocket. Haman is a man's name.
Oh, okay. Haman's pockets? I don't know.
So in American English, we call it Hamantaschen, which I think comes from German, but maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. So it means Haman's pockets, and it's a three-corner pastry filled with all sorts of fruits or other things. So if you're having some hamantaschen tonight, enjoy it and have a happy holiday.
And you told me I should get drunk.
Yes, it's a tradition. Don't drink and drive. Do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly. But you should be so happy that you don't know the difference between the evil Haman and the saintly Mordecai. And the word, Hebrew word for carnival is ad lo yada, which means you should be so happy for because of spirits that you don't know the difference. And that may be the tradition, we don't know for sure, but it may be the tradition out of which Mardi Gras carnival in Brazil and the European carnivals eventually come out of. So these carnivals are at least 2,000 years old.
Well, that is great. So if you don't see me at our events tomorrow, I'm about to announce them. Peter will come in here for me. But we're still planning for tomorrow. Two very exciting events. One is about brand customer loyalty. And this will start tomorrow, but it's Friday. I know some of you may hear us, and it means today. It's on the Friday, the 27th of February. And it would start at 6 p.m. London time or 1 p.m. New York time. And right after this, an hour and a half later, we'll be talking about pure air control services, a discussion with an expert on how hotel rooms could be converted into safe havens when it comes to what air to breathe in. So these are two interesting sessions tomorrow we have. If you wanted to
Don't forget to talk about March 5th and our anniversary.
Yeah, and if you wanted to join tomorrow or on March 5th, and I get to March 5th in a second here, but if you wanted to join tomorrow, just go to worldtourismevents.com, and you find these events right on top of it, and you can register. And there are four other events there listed. You can also already register on Saturday. We'll be talking about wedding and honeymoon tourism. On Sunday, we'll be going to Africa, and we're going to meet and greet new members for the African Tourism Board. And then our most exciting events, I think, are on the 5th of March, I believe that is a Friday. And wouldn't say celebrating.
I think it's a Sunday. Let me see what day that is. I'm looking right now.
It's we'd be remembering 1 year of rebuilding.travel. So hopefully
You'll be not only remembering but celebrating. Yes, it's March. It's a Friday.
How much we can say we're going to celebrate 1 year of COVID?
So yes, it's a happy birthday.
It's a birthday. How happy it is, we don't know. You know,
but well, it's a rebirth. We're not going to call it, because that started the slow rebirth of tourism and a chance for us to confront an enemy and figure out how, as an industry, we're going to survive. So I do think it's a rebirth, but we should always take, especially in Purim, when you're drinking and having Habentashen, you should always take a negative and make it into a positive.
No, absolutely. So hope everyone will attend. You can be in the live audience, go to worldtourismevents.com. And if you don't have time to join us live for any of the events, you always see them on Etobo News playing for the next few days. And you will see it in archive later at livestream.travel. Well, Peter.
All right. Enjoy. Remember, have a good time tonight.
Thank you. And hopefully I see you tomorrow at
1:00. All right. Bye-bye. Take care. Good night.
Bye-bye.